Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Welcome to the second guest show. Mike to tell you along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. We're live at the Silver Slipper Casino beachside right here in Hancock County, Mississippi. Bobby J and I will be on until 7:30 tonight. There'll be no Visit Pensacola Coaches Show with kind of a, might say, a jumbled up week with them having
well,
the
thing is, we can't second guess the Saints.
You can't, you know, not for not them.
I think that we should be undefeated against the open date, right? We should.
As far as I know, I think some people put money on that.
You know, probably if we were still on that losing streak, they'd have probably picked us to lose. But we're on a hot streak right now. 1-2 in a row. Now it's going to be a challenge when the Rams come to town.
Yep.
And I think it's
good. But they got smoked last night, though.
Yeah, but the Eagles are good. The Eagles are right there with the Lions. And we could have beat the Eagles.
Exactly.
And you know what? I'm worried about our defense. The Eagles needed a damn touchdown. We just stop them. We're going to beat the Eagles. Now, that's a comeback to haunt you. You look how Atlanta has scored offensive touchdown. We lost that game. So then you lose to Carolina. All of a sudden, that could be not far-fetched. That could be three wins right there. But you look at the Eagles beating the Eagles play bully ball. Look how they manhandled the Rams.
They went up front. Manhandled them, offensive, defensive line.
Remember our offensive line, they were pushing us back and whipping us in the interior, and they were motivated. I think Vic Fangio, he knows now, he's familiar more with the team, with right buttons to push. I put the Eagles right there with the Lions right now.
It's close.
And look how the 49ers have fallen by the wayside. And when you look at that right now, but the Rams, I think the Rams are kind of an outboard. It's going to be all on our defense. I think we're going to have success against their defense, but what is our defense going to do? If you look at last year, we got torched defensively. All them crossing.
You never got close. Never got close to Matt Stafford.
And what did the Eagles do? The Eagles got all over Matt Stafford. That's what we got to do.
He was running for his life.
I would tell Coach Rizzi that that's the key. And whatever Brian Young and our defensive line, we got to get after the quarterback. And look, we're not as strong as we were. Maybe the perception at the beginning of the season, who's playing in the secondary. So we got to affect the quarterback. Because, I don't know, I don't want us to be in a shootout game. What I mean, it's like if the Rams score high 20s, low 30s, that's not good. I think if we can hold them and go back to where we were, an outstanding scoring defense in the past, not so much this year. But if we can hold them on low 20s, then I think we have a great chance to win.
Bobby, you got to be able to match up with receiver-wise, too, if it's Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua.
And I don't think we can.
That's the big challenge.
That means you got to get after Matthew Stafford. You got to get after the quarterback.
And remember last year, it was Kyren Williams running the ball that set up the pass.
Yep, exactly.
So you got to stop the run first, and then you hate to say it, but Stafford got to beat you throwing it, and hopefully you can get some heat on him.
Well, the two things, we cannot give up the explosive plays, even if they have to have a double-digit drive to go down the field. And then ultimately not giving up explosive plays. And then if you have a chance to win it, then you got to finish. You have to finish. Okay, we're in the fourth quarter. It's a one-score game. Can you get a stop or can you get an offensive touchdown or field goal? Whatever it takes to win. But you look right now, the Saints still have allowed way too many explosive plays. And the issue again, if you look back to the Browns game, we won 35-14. But the Browns still had five plays that went for at least 20 yards, including, remember, the 89-yard touchdown from Jameis Winston to Jerry Jeudy. If we do that again, I'm telling you that we're not going to beat the Rams. Now, the Saints have allowed seven plays of 50-plus yards this season. I'm going to say that again. Seven plays we've allowed a 50-plus yards this season. You know what? That's tied for a league high. That was going into this weekend. So, in other words, we dead last, giving up seven plays of 50-plus yards. So, and then you look last season. You look at scoring defense and all that. The Saints only allowed three such plays. So we only allowed three last year. We already had seven. I guess you'd say, maybe a little past the midway point, obviously. But so the explosive plays, that's what has to stop. And you look at, and we say, what's an explosive play that can go for, at least 16 yards? I always look at 20 yards on a pass play or runs for at least 12. Yeah, that's getting a first down every run. Now, this season, the Saints have allowed 85 explosive plays. That's the fifth worst in the league. So we can't be in the bottom of that category going forward if we're going to have a strong finish. So we did last right now 50-plus yard plays. And we're talking about the chunk plays, how I described them, and that being 85 with the fifth worst. And, you can't be hanging out with the Jaguars. And, you're talking about giving up explosive plays, and that's kind of where we're at. So that's going to be on the Coach Rizzi. How can we finish not giving up those chunk plays? You know, if a team goes on a 12, 13, 14-play drive and they don't make a mistake and they score, you got to give it to them. You got to almost count on, okay, we're going to bend, but don't break.
And try to force them to kick a field goal.
Yes, get a takeaway. What did we do against the Eagles game while we had a chance? I don't know how we lost. Weren't we plus two or something?
Yes.
I mean, when we were taking the football away. So that's going to take that kind of opportunity or situation, to me, against the Rams to come out with a victory.
We saw last night, and we always like to talk about great players, and you saw a great performance. Saquon Barkley, my goodness, he's had over 500 yards total offense the last two games. Bobby, he's on pace to rush for over 2,000 yards, and it didn't need it at the end. But he hit that hole, and no one touched him all the way to the end zone.
You ain't catching him. He's big and he's fast. you ain't catching him. No, I think right now, everyone says, oh, it's a quarterback award. I kind of look at it like, who's the MVP? Who's the MVP? Oh, I say, it's a Lamar. Then you look at, is it Derrick? Derrick Henry in the conversation. But Saquon Barkley's almost,
he's in the conversation.
He's almost passed up Derrick Henry right now. What have you done for me lately?
You think about backs that can also catch the football coming out of the backfield. He can. Now, every once in a while, he goes on a little streak he'll drop an easy couple of passes. But, Bob, last night, he tilted the field for the Eagles. Now, their offensive line is really good, but they had good lines before. They never had a back that's close to him, talent-wise.
And Mike, I said, who's hot right now? Because I always look at the NFC versus the AFC. What are the Lions and Eagles doing? They're running the damn football.
Look
at the Lions running backs.
School.
Now it's good Jared Goff, and he's very accurate passer and all that, and that makes Jalen Hurts better. He's like, thank God we got Saquon.
That's true.
I think Colin Cowherd might have said this. When you look at going from the Giants to the Eagles, Saquon Barkley, that's like it looks like the Yankees or Red Sox with Babe Ruth.
I mean,
think about how bad that trade was. That's going to go down as one of the worst trades ever.
And the Giants passing on signing Saquon,
yeah,
who wanted to be there.
And the guy they signed and paid the big bucks to, the quarterback, Jones.
They didn't cut him.
They cut him.
We'll be back with more Second Guess right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're back here on the Second Guess Show. Mike Dottiglia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, live from the Silver Slipper Casino Beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. In some LSU news, they've landed a commitment from the four-star linebacker from Georgia, Zach Weeks. He is the younger brother of Witt and Wes Weeks. So it's Weeks, Weeks, and Weeks. Almost sound like a law firm. So the younger brother, and Witt has made the comment.
So wait,
he's the most athletic of the bunch.
Okay, now everyone's homegrown somewhere. So they're from Georgia.
Georgia.
You think if they were all that or unbelievable, you think Georgia Bulldogs wouldn't compensate them and not let them get out of the state? Okay, now, wait what I'm getting at.
I know where you're going.
Okay, the Michigan quarterback, who's five-star number one, lives 30 miles from Ann Arbor, and all of a sudden, now, you don't want to get in a bidding war, but he's going to leave Michigan. He wants to come to LSU, but then all of a sudden, look where Michigan's at right now. They're trying to keep pace with Ohio State and for the future. So they said, damn it, we better sign this quarterback in our backyard, not let him go to Louisiana, right? So okay. you understand what I'm saying?
But when you have a guy like Larry Ellison who runs Oracle, and he's a multi-billionaire, and he's willing to help you. LSU doesn't have a guy like that.
Alabama don't.
Alabama doesn't either.
Okay, I'm telling you in the future, that's why Coach Saban, that's as sly as a fox. Let me get out while the going's good. Because in the future, now I'm looking in my crystal ball. You know, always looking at that crystal ball. And I'm talking about a handful of years. I'm not talking about 10, 15, 20 years from now. Watch the teams. I don't know what's going to happen. They're going to be employees or a collective bargain, and they're going to have some kind of salary cap. But if it's still somewhat like the Wild Wild West and how you could pay players, you know who's all going to be there for sure? Texas, Texas A&M, Oregon, Ohio State. The likes of LSU and Alabama.
And Michigan.
And Michigan, yeah. The likes of LSU and Alabama, they might not be able to keep up with the Joneses. I'm not saying they won't be competitive and win, but when you're talking about when you got these high school five-star guys, now they might work out, they might not. But what I'm just saying, when you're looking at, okay, what are we actually paying these kids to come to our school and potentially win? Mike, is that's not you.
No, that's exactly right. And I heard Nick Saban make the comment when it was brought up that Ohio State has given out over $20 million in the NIL, whatever it is today. His deal is, okay, that's all great and fine. You better make sure you're paying the right guy.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Because now you're paying 17, 18, 19-year-old young men. Bobby, it's not like you've seen them play. You've seen them play in high school.
Well, for instance, you could be an unbelievable high school player, and then I remember him in high school. Why you never hear him in college or even the NFL, okay? Then they could be an unbelievable player in college. Why I never really heard about him in the NFL? Who's better than Tim Tebow at Florida? What in the hell he did in the NFL? Come on. So when you look at, high school, college and the pros. So you really rolling the dice, Mike. You can be an unbelievable five-star boy, the greatest thing since sliced bread got invented, or ketchup, and unbelievable in high school. And then, I don't know, he was okay. He was good. But he wasn't, unbelievable in college. The only guy I told you to me, if he was playing name, image, and likeness right now, Cam Newton. Cam Newton, when he went from the JUCO, won a national championship, and the one hit won that Auburn, brings a national championship, and look how they fell by the wayside. So that to me now, Cam Newton, that son of a gun be worth name, image, and likeness. When you look what he meant for Auburn.
If Bryce is going to get 2.5, I'm willing to go 3.5 for Cam.
Yeah, amen. amen. So that's why that's going to be interesting. Listen, you could be in the dance and trying to get the right prospects and pay the players. That still doesn't mean you're dealing with young kids, they're going to work out.
Yeah, that's right. And with Zach, who made a hard pitch late in his recruitment? Ohio State.
Okay, now, so Ohio State to leave Georgia.
To go to Ohio State.
You know, that's some leverage there.
We'll be back with more Second Guess right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back to the Second Guess Show. Mike DeTillia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. We're at the Silver Slipper Casino, beachside right here in Hancock County, Mississippi. Come on by and visit us. We'll be here until 7:30 tonight. And then Monday Night Football, man, and we'll be on 105.3, I think, starting at 5:30. It'll be Pelicans pregame on WWL. And then at 6 o'clock, tip-off with the Pels. On our Oakwood Hard Jewelers Talk and Text line from Clutch Points Sports, and he covers the Pelicans in the NBA, Chris Dotson. Chris, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Chris, I'm going to tell you what I normally tell Dr. David Elias when we have him on. He said, Mike, you never get me on to give good news. Well, Chris, I got you on today to give good medical news about the Pelicans.
Yeah. I mean, the best news is you're getting people back. You get CJ back. You got to get Murray back on, Wednesday against Toronto. And then January is what Zion said. So take him at his word. Maybe this whole team will be ready to go by Christmas. And they'll be fully healthy, hitting top gear, like he said, in January. So that's the good news. We're getting people back.
Yeah, now, Zion, I think the Houdat Nation, Pelicans Nation, we're about tired about Zion. We feel he's like a more talented Marcus Davenport. He's hell when he's well, but when is he well? I don't know how God made him, whatever, and all his body, and he's so powerful. I never seen a player blow out a shoe, plant so hard and blow out a shoe. But I think fans are frustrated. Because when you look at all the significant players that we had, you know, when you hit the lottery, oh, we got AD, Anthony Davis. And then you look at, I'm longing for the Chris Paul days with the Crescent City Connection and Tyson Chandler. And then I look right now with Zion. The fans want to be in that number. But come on, you got to give them hope. You got to give them hope when you start the season with 4-12. Now, I know it's dealing with injuries. But everybody's like, when they turn around and they play, then I might go watch them. No, they get mad. And, like, I can control it. I say, I'm a Pelicans fan. I never played in the NBA.
Well, we're going to get blamed for that, man. Yeah, what's happening?
You know, fans ask me, like, if I have the answer, I go, no, I'm just like you.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing to get really happy about Zion is we're going to start with a blank slate. If they want to trade him, they got a lot of leverage right now. So if the fans get too frustrated and show that frustration, if maybe there's some setbacks, the front office has the fans behind them if they want to make a move.
I agree with you. Kind of tell us a little bit how you think this will really change the Pelicans and getting back DeJounte Murray, who had fractured his left hand on the opening night of the NBA season, and he's expected to return Wednesday against the Toronto Raptors. He is sort of the orchestra leader, okay? Everybody got to watch him. And the way he can distribute the ball, he is a good shooter, plays defense really well too. But he's the catalyst to find those spots and get you open on the court. I think that's going to make a big difference for the Pelicans.
It's going to make a huge difference. And Willie Green just talked about it in pregame about the 43s that they want to get up. They haven't done it yet. But with Murray setting the table for Hawkins, Trey Murphy, C.J. McCollum, Brandon Ingram, you're going to get a lot more shots up from outside the arc. And the best thing is, from what I'm hearing, there won't be a minutes restriction on DeJounte Murray because it was a hand injury. He's been able to hit the treadmill, whereas like C.J. McCollum, you know, he's going to need a little bit of a ramp up on cardio because once you're in your mid-30s and start taking core injuries to the abductor, which I don't even know where mine went, 5 years ago. I'm in my 40s. But he's going to need some cardio ramp-up time. Murray, they're going to give him the keys to the offense and say, go figure it out. You've missed enough time. You've done enough cardio on the side. Just don't hurt that hand again.
Chris, so you expect Brandon Ingram, I don't know about this game because he's listed as questionable, but maybe be back Wednesday?
Yeah, Wednesday I think he'll definitely be back because Murray will be back. And really it'll come down to, I think, more than his legs. It'll come down to CJ tonight going over, hey, B.I., I'm back, man. Just come back with me. Trey's going to go over. B.I., questionable? Questionable? Come on. There ain't no question. We're finally getting the band back together. This is a very winnable road game. Let's go steal one, B.I. Come on. And if they talk him into it, I wouldn't be surprised to see B.I. tonight. And if he's really hurting and he's been carrying this team the way he has, and there's one thing you can't question his heart, then they'll go, okay, get ready for Wednesday night, because on Thanksgiving Eve, we're going to give the fans a feast of what this team can look like with the whole team healthy, minus Zion, of course, and then Herb.
Yeah. Now, when you look at, the Pacers are the ultimate blue-collar team. It seems like you expect them to be in the postseason. Now, would they win anything? You know, they're trying to maybe overthrow or just hang with the Celtics and all that, but I think that's a challenge. When you think, okay, we beat the Bulls, and you might say, well, the Bulls are better than you think, Bobby. But I look at the Pacers, they kind of under the radar, and that if you truly follow basketball, I know that the Pelicans have to be hitting all cylinders to beat that type of team, I think.
The one thing with the Pacers, when they get hot shooting, and, man, they love to throw up the three-point shot, and I think the world of their head coach, man, he does a fantastic job. This team ain't great on defense by any stretch of the imagination, but boy, when they get hot shooting, they are a very dangerous team.
Yeah, if they get hot and they're making shots, it's going to be hard to keep up because, again, the Pels just don't shoot three-pointers, and it's going to be tough with a team without chemistry to keep up with that. But the Pacers have kind of underwhelmed me this season. I mean, Halliburton hadn't quite been the all-NBA talent. People thought he was going to make that jump. Siakam's had trouble. They've had some injuries. Toppin's out. I mean, they've been very hit and miss. And when they're missing, the Pelicans can go win a game. If they're hitting at home, it's going to be tough, of course. It always was, no matter who's healthy, because they are expected to be one of those Eastern Conference contenders. But if they're missing, you can go steal one up in the Hoosier State.
Eve Mise, and we saw him early on, and he was the biggest surprise, I'll be honest with you. And I remember maybe 2 weeks before the season started, Jen Hale came on with me, and she was talking about she had talked to the coaches, and they said, hey, don't be surprised. He makes a bigger jump and early than what a lot of people think he can make. That they were so impressed of his ability to pick things up. He's almost like a sponge out there learning the game, and you only got to kind of tell it to him once, and he gets it. I don't know if he plays tonight with the shoulder, but I think that guy, too, could be a hidden part of this team down the stretch.
Yeah. From all the indications, he's going to play tonight. That shoulder's good to go. He's going to be on the court. He's going to get some more time. And we made a lot about him only playing basketball for 3 years. But this is a guy that, hey, sorry, fans. Sorry to break it to you. Basketball is really not that complicated. And this guy knows multiple languages. He come over to Baylor, wasn't even supposed to be. He's supposed to redshirt, and he wound up being a starter. Every time they show this guy something, he picks it up immediately, like you said. That's every indication coming out of the team. And you watch him on the court, he doesn't make the same mistake twice, and that's all you can ask for a rookie. And then he puts up some highlights that Jackson Hayes would be jealous of, and this guy's got it way more between the ears than any of you. So it's going to be fun to watch how he comes out. He's had a little time on the side to not only rest so he avoids that rookie wall, but get the mental reps and hear how the coaches are explaining the game. So I do expect him to look like a Rookie of the Year candidate over the next couple of weeks if this shoulder remains healthy and doesn't get bruised up again.
Now, Chris, this is kind of a generic question, just from a fan base. You know, you want home court advantage and all that. But do you have an answer why, I mean, on the road, the Pelicans were unbelievable. The Pelicans won a franchise record last year, 28 road games last season. They were 28-14 on the road. However, you look in the Smoothie King Center, they only won 21 games. It was 21-19, barely above 500 at home. Do you have an answer to that? What's up with that? Because you want to be road warriors, but you also want to win at home. To me, that record should be flipped. You know, road versus at home in the Smoothie King Center.
That go to show you that home field advantage don't do you a lot of good.
The home court, yeah.
Yeah, if you're buying tickets, you definitely want it to be flipped so you get, you know, hey, it's part of the whole hope to see the home team win. But I think it goes to, and we've seen the Saints have to switch the parking situation. The routine for the Pelicans on game days here is far different than the routine that is far more consistent on the road. And, I mean, this team's come together. They're still fighting for Willie Green. They do a lot of things on the road together. And I think you see them fighting for each other more because they're just more locked in. They've been talking about the game. They've been doing things with each other. They get home, and I think the routine just isn't quite as consistent as far as what it needs to be. And if they tighten up that sort of stuff, you'll see some wins at home, especially against some of these lottery teams like Toronto on Wednesday.
Chris, I think you and I have talked about this, but when they can get the band back together, as you put it, C.J. McCollum's role, do you see him maybe as the sixth man coming off the bench, or do you think he'll be in that starting five?
Really, I think Willie Green was honest a few weeks ago when we talked to him, and it's going to depend on who's hot. If he's hot and Trey Murphy's hamstring's hurting a little bit, hey, maybe we switch the minutes around. I think it's going to give him a lot of leeway with the lineups, and they won't be a set, okay, you're the sixth man now. You go win the Sixth Man of the Year award, and you're no longer a starter. Because CJ, I think, is 163 games into his career. He's never come off the bench. It's going to be a little hit to his pride, so you can ease that hit a little bit by saying, look, you're still going to be a starter some nights. And if you're getting hot and some other guys are cold, we're going to make a change. But I really don't think it's nothing this team's going to have to worry about until Zion and Herb are both healthy. And there's really a push where you have five guys who might be better than C.J. McCollum. And that's just not a problem Willie Green has to worry about right now.
Now, Chris, how do you evaluate this? You know, offensive, defensive rebounds when you look at it. And I was always a fan of Valanciunas. you know, maybe not he didn't fit with the Pelicans, but I know he was like a double-double whenever he was available and playing. And when he was on the floor last season, he grabbed, 75.5% of all available defensive rebounds. And I thought that was interesting when I read this. That was an elite rate when you consider the Sacramento Kings and the NBA's one of the best defensive rebounding teams. They collected 74.5 potential defensive rebounds. So where do you think we're at right now when you're having those missed shots, offense or defensive rebounding category?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned JV and then the Kings, because the Pelicans beat the Kings 5-0 last year with JV doing a lot of work down there on the boards. And it's going to be hurt. It's going to hurt my heart to see him play for the Lakers at the trade deadline. But I think with Missy back, you're going to chase those rebounds a lot more. It's something this team's going to have to do. If they're not, they're just not going to win ball games. Sorry, I lost a little train of thought there. Once you started talking about JV, I long for my heart. Like, if you ordered a double whiskey and Coke from a bartender and ordered a double from JV, you're more consistently going to get the double-double from Valanciunas than you are your whiskey and Coke. So, yeah, once you started talking that, the nostalgia hit me.
Yeah, because, look, that's why, I don't know, I'm just a basketball fan. You know way more than me, and you're on top of things. But I don't know, I said, all I know is when he plays, he's productive. Now, I know you might try to change the way you want to play, but when I read that, that when he was on the floor last season, he grabbed 75.5% of all available defensive rebounds, and the Kings, like you were saying, was the NBA's best defensive rebounding team at 74.5. You're not always going to be hot every night, so you're going to miss shots. Yep. And so that's what I was saying. I don't think we have that individual right now.
No, you don't.
You have to do it maybe by committee, but the committee might not even be as good as what he produced.
I agree. Chris, one last question before I let you go. Man, the over and under for this game is 225.5. So we got some people here that say, hey, man, ask Chris, you like the over or the under in there?
Oh, I like the over. I like the over.
I agree with you. Chris, thanks so much for joining us. Always insightful, and I appreciate your time, buddy.
All right, Chris.
Hey, thanks, guys. Yeah, life's too short to bet the under.
Yeah. That was Chris Dotson from Clutch Points. Also tonight, just remind everybody, on WWL 8, the Big 870, 5:30 pregame, and then at 6 o'clock tip-off, it'll be the Indiana Pacers, Pelicans, and Bob and I go on 105.3. FM. We'll be back to finish it off in hour number one right after this break. We're finishing up here in hour number one of the second guest show. Mike DeTillia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, live from the Silver Slipper Casino, beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Hollywood and Thibodeau. Hollywood, you're in the huddle with Bobby and Mike.
Hey, Bobby. Hey, Mike. How y'all doing?
All right, brother.
Hey, Hollywood, I think I met one of your homeboys. He said, tell Hollywood I said hi from Vachery. He was telling
me
the Zebra concert.
Yeah, y'all had a good time together, huh?
Yeah, we had a good time. We were rocking and rolling, old school, you know that. Hollywood, he said, man, you, like, growing, you're like a living legend now. You're going from Vachery to Thibodeau EDY, Fouchon.
Man, big time in Hollywood.
Yeah, you have to, I don't know if you're nationwide, but I know you golf south.
Hey, my name's Worldwide, not Nationwide. I'm known
Worldwide, I got you.
Hey, Bobby. I want to give a shout-out to EDY. We beat Livingston Friday night. The score was 51-14.
You should beat them. Come on.
Right. And then we got a tough game Friday night against Vanderbilt. That's going to be a good game Friday night.
Come on, you got to take care of Vanderbilt.
Well, you can't be like those Cowgirl fans. You can't just call when you win. If you don't come out on top, you know, you got to still be legit and call every week. But yeah, no, that's like a Bayou region. You look at a rivalry, and I think that's kind of what we are in the 21st century. Vanderbilt and Catholic at home and EDY from Thibodeau. No, that's
Catholic schools.
Yeah, that's packed house.
Two private Catholic schools.
Everybody want to go witness what's going to happen.
That's right, our room, Hollywood. That's standing room only for that one.
Right. Y'all not going to the game, huh?
No, well, what was Thanksgiving? I think I'm I'm busy with that T-Bob and all. So, but yeah, no.
Update on the game.
Was that?
I'm gonna give you an update on the game Friday.
Yeah,
night.
Yeah,
right.
Give us an update. Yeah. And so, are you excited about Coach Rizzi going forward in the future or what?
I would say if he has a strong finish, I say give him another chance because big guy coaches out there might not be as motivated as Coach Rizzi.
Well, I tell you what, after the top of the hour, we're going to elaborate on what it's going to take for Coach Rizzi to be a Saints coach. Because I think they got to get at least 8 wins.
I agree with you.
7 wins, not so much.
We'll be back with more Second Guess right after the news break here on the Big 870 WWL. Welcome back to the Second Guess Show. Mike to tell you along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, live from the Silver Slipper Casino, beachside right here in Hancock County, Mississippi. Bobby J and I will be on until 7:30. At 5:30, we'll be on 105.3 and finish it up with Second Guess. WWL will have Pelicans pregame, and at 6 o'clock, tip-off between the Pelicans and the Indiana Pacers. He's here each and every Monday night, Mr. Dave Hilbert from the Silver Slipper. Dave, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, man, great to be here.
Finally, LSU got back on the winning track against Vanderbilt. Man, they're so schizophrenic as a team. 24-17 win over Vanderbilt. But man, I could say that about Alabama being a schizophrenic team. Ole Miss.
Texas A&M.
You know, all of them.
No, it was truly one of the worst weekends ever for the SEC. When you got a 12-team playoff, and all of a sudden, oh, how many teams are going to get in? It's like, look, Alabama choke, Ole Miss choke, Texas A&M choke. But the only one who's really stepping up, and you know who's loving that, though? They're not going to have to play in the SEC championship game, the Tennessee Volunteers. If they beat Vanderbilt. Watch, Tennessee's will be all right. But the top dogs are Georgia.
They'll be the number 3 team.
Yeah, yeah. The
Georgia and Texas are going
in. Without a doubt. But, boy, it was a bad weekend for the SEC.
Well, let's hope LSU didn't have the same problem with the Sooners.
Well, all I know is running quarterbacks have given them issues. And that quarterback for Oklahoma, he could run with the ball. Almost like Alabama never saw him play in a game. Okay, every day you practice against a guy that can scoop. I mean, Jalen Milroe can run.
Mike, if you look at Jackson Arnold, ran for 131 yards on 25 carries, and he was 9 of 11, only 11 passes for the Sooners.
But look at the turnovers. Man, the short field, or they brought it back. I mean, that was huge for Oklahoma to get all those turnovers.
Listen, you might be like, if you don't really follow football, well, why is everybody's like, oh, shocked because Oklahoma beat Alabama? Oklahoma's a 500 team this year. They're not very good. And you look, well, where Tulane's at right now. Dave, you know it'd be crazy. Now, things have to come about. What if Tulane would make the postseason and LSU would?
Oh, well, you know
what?
LSU won't.
What? No. They're not.
LSU won't.
Right. But if Tulane could sneak in somehow.
Little brother getting in.
Yeah, and I can tell you right now, Dave, you know what I would love? So let's say that, Tulane, LSU's not in. Tulane, why don't they play the damn bowl game? I think from a local standpoint, we would love that. LSU and Tulane. I mean, because that'd be. Boy, LSU could be humbled a little bit because in the trenches.
Yeah, the one thing they'll have to do this offseason, they got to better take care of John Sumrall.
Yes.
Man, you can see it now. The buzzes are circling around coaches that, you know, teams that would want a new coach. John Sumrall is going to be the guy a lot of people would have a great interest in.
Well, just look at Coach Sumrall since he left Troy. They're irrelevant. Louisiana Lafayette crushed them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm just saying he's that good of a coach. And, you know, we love Willie Fritz, but I think Coach Sumrall's on a different level. You know, like different levels and all. And so, yeah.
And he's a former Kentucky guy. Yep. So, man. You wonder about that spot. That guy, man, think about Stoops. He came this close, about an inch away from being the head coach at Texas A&M last year, and now he might be really, really, really on the hot seat
in Kentucky. Yeah, because they've been one of those teams you might pull off an upset, but too, a little too inconsistent. So,
Dave, tell us what's happening here at the Silver
Man. It's a big week. You know, Thanksgiving's coming up this Thursday. And we brought back, as you probably know, none of the casinos on the coast have Dungeness crabs, but the Silver Slipper.
Got them back.
We got them back for Thanksgiving.
So what, do you hijack all the crab boats?
We got Dungeness crabs this Thursday in the buffet. And, of course, and all the other good traditional Thanksgiving fixings, plus shrimp and Dungeness crab. And then the Blue Bayou has some great Thanksgiving specials. We give away a Mustang this weekend at 9 p.m. And for the first time in a good while, we're bringing back live entertainment on the stage with the Tease Me Band this Friday and Saturday, 7 to 11.
If you want to go to the Blue Bayou, though, you best get a reservation.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, get a reservation.
So. Dave, Christmas coming right around, and that's also Christmas, New Year's, a big, big time here at the Silver Slipper. So who's playing New Year's Eve?
Joni Compretta and Baytown Groove. They're really good band, a big band out of Bay St. Louis.
Okay, that's
so
awesome.
They play all the time. And then Christmas Day, we're going to have Dungeness crabs and buffet as well. So, and matter of fact, we're going to celebrate two New Year's Eve. We're going to do one on that Saturday night, the last Saturday of December. We're going to have a New Year's Eve party on stage for those that don't want to come out on a Tuesday night.
So we're gonna do that. Don't make a damn bit of sense.
I know.
So Dave, the Dungeness crabs, was that your idea? Because when I look at
can I answer that and say no?
I mean, because the Dungeness crabs, when I look at that, okay, maybe you're allergic to seafood. If you're not allergic to seafood, how can you not like that white meat?
Oh man, it's like a blue crab on steroids.
Exactly.
Giant. Yeah.
Gigantic, man. I tell you, it's just.
So Dave, you're not gonna take credit for that. You just went.
But it's been around for a good while. It's kind of goes hand in hand with casinos too. Hey, I got to ask you two guys, man. How was Zebra?
Man, they were awesome.
I
enjoyed it Friday night. He went Saturday.
Stairway to Heaven, Cashmere. You know what, Dave? I was gonna go on Mike on Friday, but you know where I was Friday night? I was a nationwide card show, international. Like memorabilia in Chicago. So they flew me into Chicago, then they flew me out. Pat Swilling and I was out there. You know who I was hobnobbing with? And all of a sudden, I'm at the airport. I'm like we say, waiting for the driver. And it was the Fonz, Henry Winkler.
Oh,
I'm like, man, that looks like the freaking Fonz, you know? And it was Henry Winkler. So I was there with like Henry Winkler, the Fonz, Sting, the wrestler.
Oh, yeah, Sting, sure.
And you know, Gina Davis, the actress. Remember the baseball movie with Rosie O'Donnell?
Yeah, exactly right,
man. They all were there. So this is like a nationwide memorabilia card signing thing that we did. They had like Mike Singletary from the Bears, Dan Hampton. They had Ryan Sandberg, you know, with the Cubs. And then I look like Cal Ripken Jr. It was like a who's who in a sounding day. I was like the poor man.
No, man.
All I was just hanging. But I tell you what, I signed for – they get their money's worth. They pay you a lot, but I signed for 4 hours without stopping, whether it be helmets, jerseys, cards, and you can't even go pee. You can't
for
even
4 hours you didn't go?
No, I went before, and it was like constant. Man. And then all of a sudden,
that's a world record for you.
And then I said, man, I have a callus. and all that. You start getting writer's cramp and all that. But
did anybody bring any USFL?
Yeah, that's what I was going on.
Oh, no, there was so many Oakland Invaders, Michigan Panthers. There was all kind of stuff. Even that, like, Northwest Louisiana stuff. No,
wow.
They come up with everything.
Wow.
It's amazing. But when you think how macho the Fonz was, Henry Winkler,
and how he's not tall,
how little he is. So when he saw me and we're waiting for the same driver, he looks at me and goes, "I think you probably here with me. You probably play football or something, huh?" I said, "Yeah, I played a little bit, you know." Kind of told me, and I was like, "Whoa." And I'm like, you wouldn't believe the people at the Chicago airport coming up. They don't care about me. Man, it's the freaking Fonz. Henry Winkler, Happy Days. Happy Days are here. No, you remember, we all watched that, right?
Absolutely.
And like Opie. Opie Taylor. Howard, yeah, Ron Howard. Yeah.
Come on down to the Silver
Slipper. Come on down to Thanksgiving and win a car this weekend.
We'll be back with more second guests right after this break.
Who that?
Big 870 WWL. We're back here on the second guest show. Mike the tell you, along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert.
We got Longshoreman in the house.
Longshoreman's in the house. So, Longshoreman, great to see you. We had the Silver Slipper Casino Beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi.
It looks like he's feeling good.
Yeah. Will Guillory has come out with this. Brandon Ingram, with the calf injury, is not going to play tonight versus the Indiana Pacers.
Oh, that's surprising.
He'll be day-to-day moving forward, according to Willie Green. But C.J. McCollum, Eve Misi, will be available tonight. So
can we get all hands on deck? I mean, I don't know.
Hopefully, pretty soon we can. Let's go back to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Big John in Mid-City. Big John, you're in the huddle with Bobby and Mike.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
All right, Big John. What you got? Were you entertained even though the Saints weren't playing this weekend? I know you were.
Let me tell you something. This had to be one of the most entertaining weekends of football. Can I first of all wish you two and Longshoreman and Grant, if he's there, and everyone in the Hoodad Nation, a very happy Thanksgiving. I especially want to send that out to all the men and women of the armed forces serving overseas and at home, protecting us, allowing us to eat turkey and oyster dressing and whatever else, Dungeness crabs we can stuff in our body before we gorge ourselves on football on Thursday and Friday. You know, guys, you're right. This was for a bye week, this was one of the greatest football weekends that a Hoodak could enjoy. I mean, the only thing that wasn't there was the Saints winning another game, but at least we didn't lose a game for the third week in a row, and so there's a silver lining even in that. But, man, guys, what a glorious mess the current college football playoff picture is at the moment. And I can't think that the NCAA and all the heads of college football aren't just licking their chops over all this controversy and saying to themselves, this is obviously going to be justification to expand the playoffs even further and make even more money. And I'm going to tell you something else, guys. As an LSU alum and a die-in-the-wool Tiger Nation member, if LSU can't be in the playoff, then no other SEC team should be in the playoff.
Yeah, when you look at obviously, if LSU's not in, you ticked off, and you know, you hold the coach's feet to the fire. He's well compensated that, come on, we can't be in the top 12? Because you think what it takes to be in the postseason. It's not like old school when you can't afford to lose or you can't have more than one loss. Because it's only four teams in. But right now, the way it is, no, you should be ticked off if LSU's not in that number. But there's going to be a number of SEC teams. Their alumni base probably saying the same damn thing.
Ole Miss.
Yeah, we can.
Just take the money that
they were
they
all
spent,
in. They
all
were all
those
in.
Defensive linemen they were all that in. They were to bring in. So, man, Big John, they're going to have a lot of soul searching at the end of the year of kind of what happened here.
I think what happened here was quite simple, guys, and that is the parity with the NIL has allowed these teams to recruit more. The transfer portal has also created a leavening aspect. And, you know, you don't have just one or two teams at the top. I mean, look, even Vanderbilt put itself into the mix for a time.
What you see in the SEC, they're cannibalizing one another.
Right.
Everybody's chewing on everybody else.
Well, look how Florida has turned the corner. And we coach
you got to give Billy Napier a lot of credit.
Right. Napier.
Because he was rocky on a rocky road. But his team believed in him. They played hard, and they played really well the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, back to back. Look at that. That just goes to show you, you better pack a lunch. And Oklahoma's going to be coming into Tiger Stadium with a lot of confidence. You know, so that'll be interesting, come on, don't you think LSU should beat Oklahoma? I'd say hell yeah.
When's the last time Oklahoma played LSU in Tiger Stadium?
Never.
Okay.
They never.
So that's
never,
a first.
They never played it.
How
bad.
About that?
Now, we played a national championship game and we spanked them.
In New Orleans.
Yeah, and stuff. That Coach Saban and all that. But right now.
Ball games.
Yeah, but right now Oklahoma's a 500 team, even though they embarrassed Alabama. We still, I wish Tulane would have won that game against Oklahoma.
No, they got jobbed against Kansas State.
That was the game.
They got jobbed on that game.
Yeah, that one loss and then the two loss. But Tulane still has a chance. But Big John, you would be, from a local perspective, if you're not in the postseason, I mean, would you be against LSU playing Tulane in a bowl game? Wouldn't you be for that?
God, no. I want to see that. Absolutely. I, I certainly want to see that. That rivalry should never have been canceled in the first place, in my opinion. I don't care if the record was you know, tilted so much in favor of LSU. I don't know what caused it in the end. I'm sure it was all about money and short-sightedness. But it's the same thing with Texas and Texas A&M canceling their rivalry.
They play this weekend.
No choice now. So, guys, what was all the talk in the offseason? That the SEC would, instead of playing eight SEC teams, you'd play a ninth. After what I watched this year, I bet they don't vote that in.
Well, they're
not going to vote in a ninth SEC team.
They're going to cannibalize each other.
Yes, right.
Like, oh, what, we're only going to get maybe a couple of teams? Because you look before this weekend, Mike, they were saying, okay, how many, four, five teams? Right now, what did you say, three? I would say Tennessee's. They still got to take care of business.
They got to beat Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt, so you never know.
And I think Texas will beat Texas A&M.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know. I mean, and then, I think Georgia. But, no, think about that. I mean, it could be like a chaos. It is like
if Texas A&M upsets Texas, that would really throw it into the kilter.
Oh, but without a doubt.
I got to see it to believe it.
But it's not so like, oh, that could never happen.
That
could happen.
I agree with you. But, man, the only thing with Texas is what's going to happen to their starting quarterback, Ewers, because he got hurt, had an MRI. Done. So is he going to be available, or will, you know, they're going to go with Lil Arch?
Yeah, that'll be interesting. But all I know is from outside the SEC, I know Oregon and Ohio State is relevant. That's for sure. That you could say, oh, you could be an SEC fan and all that. I said, no. I think year in and year out in the future, that's going to happen. Oregon and Ohio State will be able to hang with the SEC, and then also Michigan because of the money.
And signing date is right around the corner. It's in early December. Take a look at the signees for Oregon and how many people they have signed way outside of, say, the tentacles of Oregon, which is a lot of California.
There.
But watch how many other players they bring in from all across the country.
Well, they ain't no damn football players in Oregon. Come on. Think about that. The state of Oregon. Now, if you a stud player, that'd be like Scott Shanley, who was a stud from Nebraska and played at Nebraska. You don't have a stud high school player from Oregon that plays for Oregon. They're going to have them now and then, but that ain't two handfuls. Come on. They got to go get all the California techs. They'll go everywhere.
Think about it. Dominican Sue grew up in Oregon, goes to Nebraska.
Yeah.
It's flipped. From Nebraska.
Dominican Sue might be the greatest professional player ever to come out of the state of Oregon.
And he was one bad dude when he wanted to play.
And he went to Nebraska.
We'll be back with more Second Guess right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're back here on the Second Guess Show. Mike Dettelia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, live from the Silver Slipper Casino beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. Come on by and visit us. Also, you can get a square on the Monday night game between the Ravens and Chargers, the Harbaugh Bowl, and see what happens. And Bob and I, we now on 105.3, and the Pelicans pregame and game will be on WWL 870.
Well, Mike and Charlie, I'm not doing too good on pick six and all that when we have that, but I can tell you what. You know why I'm cheering for the Chargers? Now, you know, I know both Jim and John Harbaugh, but I know Jim Harbaugh from when he was quarterback at the University of Michigan, and I'm the quarterback of the Michigan Panthers, and then he was the quarterback of the Bears. I was quarterback with the Saints, so we go way back. And Charlie, you remember this? Right at the beginning of training camp, I said, my dark horse, I'm telling you, watch out for the Chargers. So you know where I'm going. I'm going for the Chargers.
You got that one right.
That they might. They could be. I'm telling you, the Chargers might end up being a team that if you look like come out of nowhere,
they'll be a wild card.
I don't know if they can overtake the Chiefs but you never know. You never know. But, Mike, if you got the odds, I even told people I remember in August, I don't know, take the long shot in the Chargers to go to the Super Bowl. I don't know if it was to win it, but to go there.
We're going to go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. We got on the head football coach of the Nickel State Colonels, Tim Rebo. This segment is brought to you by Thibodaux Regional Health System. Innovation for a healthy future. Coach, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Man, in watching that game, it's almost excruciating. I thought you really had a shot to pull that game out late. Again, it took the field goal, and you got to give Southeastern credit, money on the line, so to speak, and they made the plays late to end up with the W.
Yeah, Mike, if you thought it was excruciating watching the game, you should have been on a sideline. It was probably a little bit worse. I thought we did a good job limiting a high-powered offense. I thought defense did a good job. The only points they had in the second half was with 2 seconds to go when they kicked the 40-yard field goal to win it. Early before that, the offense went down. We scored, and we had a chance to go up, and we missed the extra point, which was very, very unfitting. But it was kind of typical of how we kicked the ball this year. And then we came back and was driving again later on, and we bounced off the receiver's hands and threw a pick, and then Southeastern took it. The rest of the way went and scored. But, you know, me and Frank talked about it, and you guys know this, a rivalry game, the Riverbell Classic came down to the last play again. It was a good football game for the fans to watch.
And, you know, Coach Rebo, when you look at it, how do you build upon that going forward, like in the future? You had your ups and downs this year. Obviously, you always want to be in the postseason, and I guess the cream of the Southland Conference would be Incarnate Word and where they're at going forward. But I don't know if I've ever witnessed this. I'm just looking at the whole conference in general. I don't think Northwestern State, they've never gone two straight years and not win a game. Well, you want to talk about, yes, you always could look at, okay.
About excruciating.
Yeah,
that's
you
it.
Want to talk about and being disappointed and having pain, but well, that's really a rebounding effort, a rebuilding effort, I should say. And Natchitoches is a great, college town. Me and Coach O, we loved playing in Northwestern. And I'm looking at that opportunity there. But, boy, talking about being in the outhouse for two straight years, boy, that's not typical Northwestern football. I know that you played against them to consider where they're at right now.
Yeah, I think when you look across the league, Bobby, and UIW was 7-0, and I got to give Southeastern credit. You know, they were 6-1. They found a way to win. I thought they were going to get in the playoffs. Unfortunately, they didn't let them in. But when you look at really from us to Lamar that we talk about to SFA, everybody was still, I think, bunched up together where everybody could have beat anybody on Saturday. So what you got to do is you got to take the positives from the season and look at it. And obviously we'd have loved to have won the last game to build on a little momentum, but we got some positive things that we can go to work. We still got to be realistic and understand that we have some issues that we got to fix. We got to address always when you have an issue like that, but you got to build on the positive in the off season.
Now, Coach Rebo, how does the climate of the game has changed, at all levels. But when you look at, like, transfer portal and name, image, and likeness, can you keep up with the Joneses with the facilities? And you've got new facilities at Nicholls State and Thibodeau, but you look at the facilities they have at Lamar and all the competition. How do you, balance that? And as far as how involved you are, as far as, obviously, I think the transfer portal, but even the name, image, and likeness, because you could be a great coach, but you still got to have the horses.
Yeah, you better have some players. And we talk about that all the time, and y'all mentioned this, about the Jimmys and the Joes that you have. And I think at one point the facilities was a big deal. I don't know if it is anymore. Kids are looking for a little bit more out of that. I love our complex we have, the covered facility. I love our practice, our locker rooms, all that's big. But sometimes kids want a little bit more. But, you know, it's crazy because this year the early signing date has been moved up to December the 4th, which is right around the corner. And then 5 days later on December the 9th, the portal opens up. So you got to be smart in what you're doing and what you're looking for and how you're going to handle some of these situations. You might have some kids come available. I don't think you'll see a lot of action early. I think some things are going to happen late.
Now, Coach Rebo, is there an individual or just, I guess it's a general question, just looking in general, is there an individual, because that's a lot on your plate, that who handles the early signing period, and like you're saying, and then the transfer portal? Is that someone that you get advice from or different schools? Well, what approach do they take? Because it seems like you can be overwhelmed with that and maybe miss out or not be on top of things like you would like to because there's just so much involved.
Yeah, you have to be careful, Bobby, because in the past, you know, we're looking to sign high school players, and now you want to get them in the boat as early as you can and sign them. But you better be careful because they might be somebody down the road. But sometimes a bird in the hand, so to speak, you got to take. If you like your guys, you take them. But you better have a couple in your pocket if some guys open up. But, you know, we still going to do the same thing. All of our coaches are hitting the road, talking to coaches out there, getting a feel of what's going on. It's going to be an interesting offseason.
Tim, a lot of times, I know you and I have talked about this, that you guys' numbers in the early signing period have been fairly small. The big hits have come in February from a signing standpoint. Is that going to be the case this year, that you probably have a small class in December and a much bigger class in February?
Yeah, Mike, I think that's going to be it. You'll have a couple kids who want to jump in, and maybe a couple more this year than in the past because they understand the portal. So these high school kids, I think some of them coaches are advising them to sign early to secure your spot, so to speak. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see. We got a couple saying they're ready to come on board. And let me tell you, I'm ready to take them if they're ready to be colonels.
You know, Coach Rebo, I think this needs to continue. I think LSU within the state, they got to play Tulane. I think that's something, a big part. But, you know, you were able to play LSU and Tiger Stadium, that experience for your kids and also yourself as being, you know, all the years you've coached. And then whether it be McNeese, Southeastern, whoever it might be, to play LSU, I think that needs to continue. I don't know the scheduling and how that's going to come about, but I know you got to be in favor of that. If you're the big dog like LSU, and everyone's trying to have a budget and their programs and all, to have maybe to be in that rotation going forward, whether it be Nicholls State, McNeese, like I said, Southeastern, Northwestern, whatever. Louisiana Tech, it goes on and on, to come to Tiger Stadium. And then even you from Louisiana. I mean, I think if you want what's best for the fans, people want to see LSU play Tulane every year. Well, what's wrong with that? I mean, to me, I never understood that. If you want to give the fans what they want, now I know it's all about the money, but that's something that I think if you the fans wishes, they would love to have that.
I think the coaches would love to have that. And you know, I say probably unfortunately that there's only one LSU in the state that can pay that kind of money. But all of the coaches love to play in Baton Rouge. But I'll tell you, we love going to play at Tulane. We love going to play at UL Lafayette, going to Louisiana Tech. I think a lot of the state schools need to play each other. We played Southern. I'd love to get Grambling on the map. And, you know, of course, we play all the conference games. But I think everybody having these state schools play each other is good for the fan base, is good for the people around here. And look, it still is pretty good football.
Tim, one thing I'll tell you, there was a lot of talk in the offseason that the SEC would go to a 9-game SEC schedule. After what I see this year, everybody chewing on one another, that ain't happening. So it's going to open up a spot where you can play an in-state school, because that's no way. If I'm a coach, I'm voting to play a 9th SEC game.
Yeah, because you cannibalize each other.
Hey, Mike, you were right. That has kind of put our scheduling on hold a little bit, because nobody knew that if you, and not just in Louisiana, but the schools in Texas, if they were going to be able to play some of the other FBS schools in their state. But you're exactly right. They don't want to beat up each other like that. They may be looking to go to two divisions and limit some of those games against each other.
Coach, thanks so much for joining us each and every week. Man, we always appreciate it, and we'll get you back on at signing date time and talk about the guys that you've signed. But we really appreciate it here, joining us each and every Monday night.
Guys, thanks for having me all year long. And who knows, Mike, I might show up on a Monday night again, wherever y'all are.
Yeah, oh, yeah, they got players in Mississippi, Coach. Yeah. I can tell you that.
Yeah, it could be a recruiting trip. You're going to have two birds and one stone.
Yeah, you just mark it down as a recruiting trip
when
you come see us.
It's like you were saying, a bird in the hand is better than two in the bush.
Thank you, Coach. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right.
That was our Tim Rebo segment, the head football coach at Nicholls State. It was brought to you by Thibodaux Regional Health System, innovation for a healthy future. We'll be back to you. Basically close it out in hour number two right after this break. We're closing it up here on hour number two of the second guest show. Mike Dottiglia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, live from the Silver Slipper Casino, beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. Hey, we go until 7:30 tonight, so we'll have a lot more football talk, Pelicans talk, right after this news break on the Big 870 WWL. Welcome back to the second guest show. Mike Dottiglia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. We're live at the Silver Slipper Casino, beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. Come on by and see us. We'll be here until 7:30 tonight, and we're on 105.3 FM, and right after second guest, it'll be Monday Night Football as the Baltimore Ravens play the L.A. Chargers. And if you want to listen to the Pelicans, it's on WWL, the Big 870, as we speak, as the Pelicans play the Indiana Pacers. It's time now for Triple Option. And while Bobby sets up, I'll go first. One of the things that we've seen here with LSU, and the receiving core has been sort of hot and cold, but one guy stepped up, and that's Aaron Anderson. Man, for Edna Carr, star, goes to Alabama, decides after 1 year to transfer to LSU. Last year, he caught 12 passes for 59 yards, zero touchdowns. Year two, 52 catches, 778 yards. He's averaging 15 yards a catch, five touchdowns. Talk about a guy that has really ticked up his game. It is Aaron Anderson at wide receiver for the Tigers.
Yeah, no, he's taking advantage of that. And I'm going to go triple option and talk about money. Oh, Bob, why are you talking about money? No, money for the community and our city and what it means. And what I mean, you know, we got the Super Bowl and the economic impact and what the Super Bowl means coming to New Orleans. You know, we'll talk about, boy, how the traveling draft show. Look how the draft is not just being in New York, going all over, and how the NFL
will be in Green Bay
could sell that. No, it's unbelievable. We ain't never have the way the draft is because we have Draft Fest. Not Draft Fest. We have a Jazz Fest
Jazz
and all
Fest,
that. And so it's we don't have enough hotel room, a conflict of interest, whatever. But this caught my attention because I remember the very first combine, the NFL scouting combine, I was invited to, and then it was in Tampa Bay, Florida. It was not always in Indianapolis. It was in Tampa Bay, Florida, and ended up signing with the Michigan Panthers because they were going to guarantee me some money. And so I said, why am I going to work out in the NFL? And, I mean, I had a wife and a kid to support at the time. But this one caught my attention. The state's tourism office announced this being Indiana, announced a deal that they're extending the partnership with the league that began way back and previously, the deal, Mike, with the scouting combine set to run through 2025 now, and the NFL combine has been a proud history of Indianapolis together, and they're thrilled to continue the longstanding partnership. And, for instance, if you look at, the Business Bureau and all that in Indianapolis and the local community, going through the 2026 event. And Peter O'Reilly, the executive vice president of club business of international league events at the NFL, said, now it's a small amount, but it's still, what do you associate the combine? Indianapolis.
Right.
Central locality and all that. But the event guaranteed a record, right? $9.5 million in economic impact in 2024. Mike, it's basically they've attracted like 27,500 who attend the family friendly combine experience. So you know how when you associate something, so when we think of the players, and that, you know, the NFL is year round, and when we think about the combine, the draft, and all is going to come about, that Indianapolis is going to continue to have that. It looks like the deal right now for at least it's going to like 2025, 2026. So it'll be now. I think they're going to eventually bid that out.
I think it'll be bid out
and have more competition for that. But okay, the central locale is good for that.
You came out in '83. I did 9 years television with John Forque. John was in '82. John tells me, Mike, we had four combines. Him and Arch Schmeister, they went to the four different combines across the country.
Because you used to have him at Bledsoe, United,
right,
and all these different scouting departments. It wasn't just all one.
Yeah,
right, right.
So John was telling me, man, you'd go here, you'd work out for a group of teams in the Northeast. Then you were in Florida. Then you were in Texas. Then you were in California. And he said, man, him and Art Schleister, and, man, you know, Art ended up being a high first-round
pick. With the Colts, right?
Yeah, he had some issues.
We like to gamble a little bit, yeah. He needed to go to Gamblers Anonymous. I actually went to prison because you want to talk about having a gambling problem. He went to prison because of that.
Basketball game.
You don't bet on the NBA. He bet on the NBA. That, yeah. He got in trouble with that, trying to chase his money.
But John told me, man, we were traveling. He said in the whole group, we'd all go sort of as one from one place to the next. And he said, then that was it. It cost the NFL way too much money to do that.
So why don't we combine this?
And so that's why they put it centralized in Tampa the following year when you went.
Yeah. So it's amazing how that's grown. But the NFL's year-round. When you look at it, how they always want your attention no matter what the month. What would be the weakest month for the NFL? Is it July? It'd have to be maybe
July.
The last weekend in June and the 3 weeks in July, right?
Yep.
That'd be the only dry period when it seems like there's no NFL news.
Well, the good news is for Louisiana is they have Louisiana Line Camp.
Yep.
Manning Passing Academy. Yep. The Dr. David Elias' Pro Football Camp. Charlie, you're next.
Guys, I'm going, you know, we talked about this offseason, how the best running backs kind of flew off the board real quick when they moved from team to team. And so the Giants let Saquon leave, and we're seeing what he's doing in Philadelphia. The Titans let King Henry leave. We'll see what he's doing in Baltimore. And the Raiders let Josh Jacobs leave, you know, going to the Packers. So Sam Block of ESPN put this out. Those three teams talking about, you know, obviously, once again, the Giants and then the Raiders. And then the Titans are combined 7-26, and those three running backs right now are combined 24-9. So it's a complete swap. And you're looking at the top rushing leaders right now, guys, this season. Saquon Barkley, number one, 1,392 yards. Number two, Derrick Henry, right behind him, 1,185 yards. Number three, Josh Jacobs, 944 yards. I'd say those investments are kind of working out.
I agree with you, Charlie.
And the running back, to me, the moral of that story, the running back position is not dead. Everyone wants to see the forward. No, we want to see the forward pass and all that. But if you truly want to win, you want to keep NFL defenses off balance. So it just shows you right there, the proof's in the pudding. Can you run the ball?
Okay, who does this help out the most?
The quarterback.
Other than that, I'm talking about for the future. The guy, the Boise State running back, Jim.
Oh, yeah.
Just think of that. His draft status. His agent can say, okay, look what these other teams gave
how
up.
How relevant the running back is.
And look how they won. Man, Genty's, he's going to have a lot of teams after him.
Because
he's clear-cut, the best halfback in college football.
And, you know, Charlie and Mike, you know, you got to have luck with injuries and all that. And I think this is his first game he played. Mike, he hardly played at Texas, the running back with the Panthers. What did he do, Charlie?
Jonathan Brooks.
Jonathan Brooks hasn't been good. I thought you were talking for a second there about Chuba Hubbard, who, you know, is up there at number five in rushing yards. But, yeah, Jonathan Brooks had a very quiet debut, but he's still coming back from a major injury. I think he'll be fine.
I did not think he would be on the football field at this time when he had the injury. That ACL is normally 11 full months and then maybe a little lead time. He came back much quicker than I think most people thought he would.
Right, because Carolina's counting on him to be like Bijan Robinson is for the Falcons.
So you got a 1-2 punch here with Chuba Hubbard.
Yes.
And with Brooks. Yeah. And, hey, little Bryce,
he played
really well yesterday.
Hey, little Bryce maybe turned that corner. He was hanging with it. He just shows you the parity in the NFL, though.
Absolutely. We'll be back with more Second Guess right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on the Second Guest Show, Mike DeTillo along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, live from the Silver Slipper Casino, beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. We're going to go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. He is the host of the Jordy Collada podcast. Jordy Collada. Jordy, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Jordy, it's been a difficult 10 days for LSU football. When you look at it, losing to Florida, I know Florida beat Ole Miss, but to me, they're an average team in the SEC. And then lose Bryce Underwood on Thursday. You did get a little bit of a click up when you defeated Vanderbilt 24-17 Saturday night. And then today, Bruce Feldman comes out with his piece and kind of an expose of kind of the good and the bad and what's happened to Brian Kelly at LSU. This has been a difficult 10 days for the Tigers. Now, how you can cure it? You beat Oklahoma and you hit big on signing date, which is in early December.
Yeah, and you heard Brian Kelly really kind of talk about that today at his press conference of what could be coming with that transfer portal class, with what they're going to do on the open market this year. You know, I mean, I think they're going to be aggressive. It sounded like they had built up the war chest and just had some money opened up with the decommitment from Bryce Underwood. You know, I think they have some needs and really trying to find the best way to recruit the portal, and they have not found that yet, and I think they're going to change their strategy up, you know, as far as going in and being aggressive in this offseason. I think that, like I said, they have some money to play with and, you know, going after some high-end guys and making them some offers that are competitive, you know, to the bigger schools. And it really did sound like Kelly was talking about that at length today in his press conference. That's his, you know, really kind of in-depth as I've heard him go into recruiting strategy. And obviously last week it feels like everybody is, you know, the world is melting with what happened with Underwood. So Kelly had to come out and, you know, kind of give a state of the program, or at least just a little bit of a, you know, here's our plan. So, you know, it was interesting to hear how he's going to fill some of those voids and, you know, the ways that they're going to do it. And you know, the New York Times piece, I think, you know, the timing of it is, you know, just kind of piling on of what you talked about. It's been a rough couple of weeks here in Baton Rouge for Kelly, the football program. And, you know, that article is just kind of a cherry on top, but, you know, I agree with you. You know, I mean, they quieted a lot of people down last Saturday night. I think it was good to see that there was a big crowd there. There was a lot of people at that game. And, you know, you'll have an opportunity to see Oklahoma and Tiger Stadium for the first time ever. And, you know, close out on a positive note for LSU football. And I think that's the goal this week.
You know, Jordy, when you look at the leadership, you know, you have a players-only meeting or you get together. I thought what was significant, you know, a lot of times the quarterback, it has to be the leader, natural leader. But just elaborate a little bit more on senior running back Josh Williams. I'm looking at what he was able to do. He had 90 yards on 14 carries, a season high in yardage. But you look at, he also had 151 total yards, two touchdowns on 18 touches. So I'll look at that. And, you know, you got to walk the talk. You know, you're in front of the team, you're trying to get them motivated. Well, you got to back it up on the film. And I think he was able to do that against Vanderbilt. And that goes a long way as far as I'm just talking about player to player, whenever a player is able to do that, to walk the talk.
Well, and look, he was really kind of the center at the talking that week. I mean, he had called a couple of, you know, he was at the center of that players meeting. Kelly talked about how he was, you know, talking to the team after the game, and those being the expectations of the program, the football player, from Josh Williams' standpoint, what it should be for every player in that locker room. And, you know, I think Josh Williams is really, he's wearing number 18. He fits that mold and fits that description as well as anybody who's worn that number in a recent memory. Because of just that, you know, he really does hold it very dear and holds the standard very high to what it should be for LSU football. And, you know, I think you saw that on Saturday night, his two early scores. Obviously, he's always very, you know, he's a beast in pass protection and plays the game physical. That was a physical game on Saturday night. And I thought that Josh Williams, you know, like you said, Bob's, is, you know, he talked a lot of it last week, and then he got there on Saturday night and walked it. And, you know, as we know, as competitors, as you guys know, and Bobby, you've seen it at the highest level. I mean, there's one way to fast track respect for a player, and that's going out there and handling your business on a Saturday night. Not that Williams is looking for any respect in the locker room, but, you know, after the week he had of, you know, trying to get everybody on the same page and trying to get everybody that to hold the rope and set the standard and or live up to the standard, you know, I think you know, him to go out there and lead that performance goes a long way.
Now, Jordy, listen, the quarterbacks get too much of the glory, too much of the blame. I'm looking at Nussmeier, completed 76% of his passes, 28 of 37 with 332 yards. So you can look at, even though he got sacked, that was really Florida got after him. And Nussmeier was sacked only once against Vanderbilt. But I can tell you, if this continues against Oklahoma, he'll have a big-time game. And it's all about, you know, can you keep defenses off balance? And the reason why I bring this up, you know, LSU trying to run the ball, subpar performance, obviously, against the Aggies and A&M. But then they average 5.6 yards per carry against Alabama, 6.6 yards against Florida. And then you look, they're able to run the ball against Vanderbilt. So just like, oh, we got to throw it 50 times a game. A lot of times people don't realize that, that how important that is for a quarterback, and that you're able to have some sense of balance. And if they can run the ball, and that'll definitely bode well for Nussmeier and the Tigers against Oklahoma Sooners.
Yeah, and that was a physical game Saturday night, Bob. You know, I mean, that Vanderbilt team was, they wanted to come in and run it at LSU, and they were going to try and take away the run. It was good to see Will Campbell was named SEC Offensive Lineman of the Week. And, you know, a lot of praise for Nussmeier in the run game this past week from Brian Kelly post-game on Saturday night, and even kind of doubling down on it today at the press conference, talking about, you know, going back and watching the film, how impressive Nussmeier was of getting in and out of, you know, situations and checks and getting them into run, you know, styles, plays, and even, you know, kind of throwing those outlets to Aaron Anderson and C.J. Daniels on the perimeter was, you know, kind of just toss sweeps, you know, I mean, just kind of playing the numbers and, you know, being able to run the ball. So, you know, I think Nussmeier is, you know, somebody who obviously could have used the benefit of the run game at certain points this season, but, you know, has really been instrumental in it when the team has performed in that category. On Saturday night, they had it clicking, and a lot of it was because of Nussmeier recognizing what was going on the defense and stepping in there and making the play and making the call.
Jordy, one of the things that we always try to preview the next game, and so Oklahoma's up next. As I was telling Bob, Jackson Arnold, you know, he's a running quarterback. You know, he's just not a scrambler. Those type guys have given LSU a lot of issues in the past. Now, he is way erratic as a passer. He's all over the board. Some games he looks pretty good. In other games, he's absolutely lousy.
But even though they crushed Alabama, he only threw 11 times, but he was 9 of 11.
So he played pretty well there, but, man, it was the turnovers. They were able to run the football pretty well. Looking at this game against OU, my thing is, if I'm OU, I'm going to have Jackson Arnold be a big part of my rushing attack, because LSU has not shown they can stop that.
No, it's. I think it would be mindless not to go into a game versus LSU with a running threat and quarterback. And not only that, look at what Oklahoma just did to Jalen Milroe. I mean, like, if they needed any more confirmation of how bad LSU was struggling against that style of player, you know, they had him in their place on Saturday night and just throttled him. You know, I mean, they turned him into a throwing quarterback, and, you know, I mean, he had no answer. And, you know, I think that's probably even going, you know, more over to the fact of what we're talking about. You know, they had a chance to see, you know, what looked like an LSU killer over the last 2 years really kind of be neutralized when they try to turn him into a throwing quarterback. And, you know, I think that is definitely going to be the plan for Oklahoma this week. I expect Blake Baker and the defensive staff to have a plan in place. But, you know, Mike, I expected that to happen against Alabama and Jalen Milroe. And some of the things that they were missing on was not scheme. You know, I mean, they were still out of position. They were still not in the right places. They still weren't, you know, responsible defensive football against a running style quarterback. So, you know, I would think that they would be prepared for Saturday in Arnold because, you know, I, like you, would anticipate, especially with his inability to throw the ball, at least, you know, from a numbers standpoint, he was efficient last Saturday night. But you know, I mean, I think if you can turn him into, you know, a one-dimensional guy, like what they did to Milrow last week, then the advantage can flip real quick to the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, while it sounds easy, LSU has very much struggled in trying to get that done this season. So I expect that to be the plan for Oklahoma, of them coming in and trying to beat LSU with a running quarterback. And, you know, hopefully for LSU's sake, for the third time in the last 5 weeks, that doesn't happen. You know, what has happened with, you know, obviously Texas A&M and Marcell Reed and Jalen Milrow, and what the possibility is for Saturday.
You know, him to beat you with his arm, yeah, not with his legs.
And yeah. Then, Jordy, right quick before we let you run, boy, you look at the SEC cannibalizing one another. I mean, boy, talk about a bad weekend for the SEC. What? I mean, look, A&M's Alabama. I mean, it was unbelievable. Ole Miss, and then so how many teams do you think they get in the postseason? Three or what? Well, that's what it seems like. Tennessee could be in a good position.
I will say this, Cannon. Anybody who was holding out hope for a ninth league game is definitely going to lose that vote.
Gone.
Yeah, I think it's still four. I still think it's four.
Okay.
The TV contracts, you know, and I think Tennessee's the last game in, the last team in.
All right. Thanks, Jordy.
Thank you, Jordy. Appreciate it, buddy.
Bye, boys.
That was Jordy Collada from Baton Rouge on the Jordy Collada podcast. Does a great job covering the LSU athletic scene. We'll be back, and we come back. Matty Hudak, sideline reporter for the Tulane Green Wave, will join us previewing Thursday's game as the Green Wave takes on Memphis. Back here on the second guest show, Mike Dettillo along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. We're at the Silver Slipper Casino, beachside right here in Hancock County, Mississippi. Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. She's a sideline reporter for the Tulane Green Wave and also publisher and host of Before the Whistle podcast, Maddie Hudak. Maddie, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. I got one question. How many years have you been the sideline reporter for Tulane?
This is wrapping up my fourth season here on the sidelines.
Okay, three of the four, where you ended up at the end of the season?
With a spot in the conference championship here, Mike.
Hey, you're bringing them good luck. You're bringing them good luck, Maddie. Three to four.
It's all that good karma there, Maddie. I mean,
We got you another extension, maybe.
So that means a whole lot better. You on the sideline versus Gus Cattingill. So Gus didn't win another. So you the magic formula, Maddie.
Yeah. Gus got to go on to that.
I think Corey told me that my record as a sideline reporter is 34-16. So I'd like to think pretty good.
That's pretty good, Maddie. We all know. When you play Memphis, and I brought this up to Coach Sumrall, man, the one thing they got is fast dudes. They are athletic.
They can't play defense, but they're going to score.
But, man, you in a track meet every time you go up against Memphis because of the speed and athleticism of their skill players, running back, wide receiver, flex tight end, quarterback. That's a big challenge for a defense that has really played lights out the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, kind of looking at Memphis this year, I think that kind of parallels a lot to the 2023 Tulane team, where they had all the veteran leadership, they had a lot of guys returning, but it just didn't really seem to click as well on the field. But that doesn't take away from the massive skill that they have, that, you know, you look at a lot of the teams that Tulane's played in the AAC this year, and there's just been such a clear disparity in competition level. This, to me, isn't one of those times. And if you look at the last couple of games for Tulane, they went up against Charlotte. They benched one quarterback halfway through. The other guy couldn't really complete anything. Then they go over to Temple was in the middle of that. Really hard to judge anything. They're missing their best skill player in Dante Wright. Then you go to Navy where, yeah, they shut down the run. They shut down an option team, but the explosive passing game wasn't really there because of Blake Horvath's, you know, injury and also their coverage. This, to me, is going to be, you know, a test where it's not just about them all doing their jobs. Assignment, talent, and skill is really going to matter against a veteran quarterback that, pretty much leads the conference in most metrics, very similar to how Pratt did last year.
Matty, before we talk about the 12-team college football playoff probability for the Wave, I'm looking at Army. They got spanked by Notre Dame, 49-14 loss on Saturday night. It virtually guaranteed Tulane will play for the right to host Army in December the 6th, the American Athletic Conference Championship game. Now, when you look at you facing Memphis on Thanksgiving night at Yeoman Stadium, are like, the student body, are they on campus? Because that's kind of weird come Thanksgiving night. And considering how relevant Tulane is, there's no reason that shouldn't be a packed house come Thursday night against Memphis. I mean, you should be standing room only. Is that going to be the case, you think, or what?
I really hope so. You know, it is a shame that it's not on Black Friday, because I do think so many students would be at this game and would really fill a lot of those seats. But everyone that has Thanksgiving, for me at least, I'm done eating by that time, and I'm looking to go on a walk and get out of the house and not just sit there and have all my food be in my stomach. So being able to go to a football game where, I'm not going to get into they're the best team in Louisiana right now, but they're playing really winning, dominating championship level for their conference football, and they're getting that deserved attention. As you said, we'll get to that 12-team playoff thing, but there's a reason that they're getting the attention that they did. You don't just go into a service academy like Navy and shut them out 35-0. That deserves a lot of respect, but ultimately it does all come down to this weekend's matchup, and I just hope that, at least with respect to Tulane side of things as well, that the focus for them really remains on getting this last one done. But these seniors, I talked to three of them today, Josh Remetich, Ethan Hudak, Eric Hicks. There are a ton of guys that are not just here for the last couple seasons. They stuck here through the 2-10 year. And so for them to really see out that whole turnaround, stick around for another coaching change and really turn this into a player-led team that this is the earliest they ever clinched a conference championship. If there was ever a time to go see some great guys play football with a hell of a head coach that's a lot of fun, it would be this Thursday for tickets that are selling for $5.
Whoa, bang for your buck at this day and age. Yeah, take your kid. They don't know it's a football game. Let's go. Come on, you get excited. The crowd's going crazy. I think it could be a great atmosphere. And, Matty, I guess I'm going to look ahead and not put the cart before the horse, but we can do that as long as, the players and the coaches aren't doing that for the Wave. Take care of business come, Thursday night against the Memphis Tigers. But looking at, American Athletic Conference champion, and I'm just saying Tulane, in theory, no one would have maybe thought this. You could be ranked higher than a champion of maybe the Big 12. And look at the chaos you have right now in the Big 12. And, they still have, eight teams in contention for its title game entering the final weekend. But then you look at the college football playoff rules, it stipulates that, the top five conference automatic champions get automatic berths, regardless of whether they're in Power Four or a group of five leagues. Just explain that, because that's that was hurting my brain. Okay, well, what's going to happen with Tulane and all? Now, we still got to see how this is going to play out. But Tulane got a fighting chance to be in that postseason.
They got more than a fighting chance, to be honest.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, the way that they moved up five spots, I can't think of the last time that I saw a jump like that for Tulane. I mean, they haven't been in the college football playoff rankings really for a long time ever. But to go up five spots for that win at Navy, that really showed to me that the respect level is there. And they won the bye week, all things considered. I always go back to, conversations with Nick Anderson in the Cotton Bowl year, and how it was always just a team of destiny, and how confident he was that everything was going to work out, that if they were meant to be there at the end, Navy would beat UCF. They end up, pulling that off. They end up breaking a 32-game winning streak in Cincinnati. They had to pull off so many of those things on their end, but all the chaos that basically needed to happen in order for us to be having this conversation, like you said, about the top-ranked conference champions, that all happened in Tulane's favor this weekend, where you see kind of where they make the jumps this upcoming week, because Boise, as unconvincing as their recent wins have been, they're not going to get penalized because they're continuing to win. But the Big 12, they could end up in a scenario where a lot of those teams have three or four losses. ASU was ranked behind Tulane last week, and they tend to really not penalize teams on byes. You have to think that they pass Army as well, and with all the teams from 7 to 15 that lost in front of them, there's really an opportunity for them to move up there. And I think, well, they haven't played Notre Dame. You saw Notre Dame played Navy. Then you saw Tulane played Navy. If they go and play Army and shut them down the same way in that same dominating fashion that Notre Dame did, to me, that's the best that you can say to weigh them against, a Power Four game that they're not able to have this late in the year. I think that that really gives them serious credibility to, making a run at this. You just think about the games in Kansas State and Oklahoma, and yes, they lost them at the end of the day. They still were, within one questionable call from going to overtime against Kansas State. You have a redshirt freshman in his first road environment against an SEC school with a week that they had 1 to 2 days to prep because of the hurricane, and they still came back and made it a 5-point contest after going down 21-0. So if I've ever been confident that a team like Tulane can compete with an SEC-sized school and the Power Five programs, they weren't able to at the end of this beginning of this year. What they are right now, I would not count them out of anything.
Maddie, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Really appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving to you and the family. And I told you last time, we had you on, Steve Gelly, try to jinx you. Ethan, about the deep snapper. Man, you don't talk about the deep snapper because the only time you know about him is when he screws up.
Yeah, bad snap.
real quickly. The origin of him becoming a deep snapper, when did that start?
Ethan Hudak, actually, I had this conversation with him. He was kind of an odd body type. He's, a little stocky for a long snapper. He wasn't really big enough to play guard or center, and so they said, there was a guy that he knew that was a long snapper and said it's a great way to get on the field immediately and possibly get a college scholarship. He kind of looked at it like a business decision and just perfected that one skill. It's really paid off for him in the long run.
Maddie, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Good luck Thursday night when the Tulane Green Wave play Memphis.
Thank you so much. Can't wait for it.
All righty. Thank you, Maddie. Maddie Hudak, who's the sideline reporter for the Tulane Green Wave. We'll be back to finish up in the 6 o'clock hour here right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're finishing up here our 6 o'clock hour at the Silver Slipper Casino Beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. Bob, we saw it when it came down. Daniel Jones has cleared waivers, so now he is free to negotiate with anybody in the NFL team-wise. And his agent has put it out that he would like to go to a contender. If it's Minnesota,
hello,
Baltimore Ravens,
hello,
even if he has to watch, that's where he wants to be.
Well, because you have Andrew, you're in there and you're playing on a team with a great supporting cast, and all of a sudden you're playing in the postseason. Maybe work a little magic. No, look at how Sam Darnold got benefited going with the 49ers.
Baker Mayfield went with the Rams.
Yes, because that could benefit you. That's a smart move. Don't go to the Raiders. They're not any good.
We'll be back with more Second Guess right after this news break here on the Big 870 WWL. Welcome back to the Second Guess Show. Mike to tell you along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. We're live at the Silver Slipper Casino, Beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. Come on by and visit us. We'll be here until 7:30. Want to tell everybody tomorrow, Bobby J, myself, along with Steve Geller, will be at the Rouse's Markets out in Houma on Martin Luther King Boulevard. Come on by and visit us. We'll be there from 4 to 7 tomorrow afternoon. On our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, works for the Believe Network in covering the L.A. Rams, Aaron Coscarelli. Aaron, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you for having me.
Aaron, I think what you saw last night is what we saw in the third game of the season. The Eagles got some players up front. They beat you up in the trenches. And did they take it to the Rams last night?
Oh, my gosh. When they told me I was going to join your show, I felt like it might have been too soon. I'm not sure I'm able to recover from what we saw last night. The performance by the Rams. And, I think we came off a game against the Patriots where Stafford was not touched. He was totally clean in the pocket. And we thought we had the right offensive line combination. That had been a big storyline for the Rams heading into the season with a rookie under center and, you know, trying to figure out the right combination. And boy, did the Eagles have our number, sacked five times. Stafford just never seemed to have any time. Our running back fumbled. I mean, you know, it was an embarrassment. And I think Sean McVay is going to go back to the drawing board because, you know, you can't, every game so far is so important for the Rams. They're still in playoff contention, but yeah, last night, it was not good.
Aaron, all I know is those dudes on that defensive line for the Eagles, I'd much rather clothe them than feed them. Because every one of those guys, they tipping that scale and is above 300. Bobby?
Yeah, no, and Aaron, you know, how, what have you done for me lately? And I look, you know, Los Angeles community. My daughter lives out there in Playa Vista by Loyola Marymount. And it's like, I don't know, Dad, if they'll be on the bandwagon, obviously. I look at the Lakers and the Dodgers. But the Rams and the Chargers have to earn the community's trust. We always would say USC was like the professional team before the Chargers moved from San Diego, and obviously the Rams came back home. But are they more optimistic maybe right now where Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers are than the Rams? When you look at now, we can see what's going to occur tonight. But what is the mindset in the L.A. community? Because you have two NFL teams. Are they feeling any love or just they kind of taking a wait-and-see approach?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. You know, I think the L.A. community, I think it goes Lakers first, Dodgers, Clippers. And as far as their professional football team, you're absolutely right. USC used to be the professional football team in town when Pete Carroll, Reggie Bush, and Matt Leinart were there. And, you know, yeah, they have to earn their stride. You know, I don't know if you guys caught the game last night, but it was a lot of Eagles green. So, again, another massive primetime loss at SoFi Stadium. I was at the Dolphins game when the same thing basically happened. Stafford sacked, I want to say, four times in that one. And like I mentioned, you know, they just need to go back to the drawing board because I think we're all kind of scratching our head. We knew it was going to be an uphill battle. Remember, they lost Aaron Donald this offseason. He retired. He hung it up. Chris Shula became the new defensive coordinator. Raheem Morris, who was the former, decided to leave, took that Atlanta job. And I think we knew the Rams were going to have some things to figure out, but we always believed that Les Snead and Sean McVay were wonderful when it came to talent evaluation. Players loved to play for them. But it just seems as of right now, it's been a roller coaster ride. There's been games where they've been playing absolutely lights out. That Thursday night football game against the Vikings, Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp. And, you know, one of the things, here's the other thing. We've always sort of, I would say, the Rams media would say, injuries, right? We didn't have Cooper for a few games. We didn't have Puka for a few games. We've had some issues on the offensive line. But now, you know, it just seemed like the team was flat. And, you know, we don't know what's going to end up happening. Josh Cardi, our kicker, it seems as though maybe McVay has lost a little bit of trust in him. So it's going to be an interesting matchup against the Saints when the Rams go to New Orleans this week. And we'll have to see. I think even the Rams are actually 2.5 points favored, which I'm a little surprised by that. But because your team's clicking right now under the interim coach in Rizzi. So it's going to be an interesting matchup for sure.
Well, you know why I think the Rams are favored? Because they torched the Saints last season.
Yeah, that's in your memory.
And our defense couldn't stop. They're running these crossing routes. Are we going to guard them? And then Matthew Stafford could build a sandwich or make a sandwich back there.
And Kyron Williams was a big part of that, running the football.
Running the football. So that's why I think the Saints offense can have success. But I don't know if our defense could slow down the Rams offense.
They that's better get think. Pressure on Stafford, yeah, or it's going to be a long
that's
day.
That's what I think. It's look and see what the Saints defense does. Because, you know, as a player, a former player, that when you play against a particular team, when you go to bed at night before the game, you always kind of focus or have good dreams or dwell upon, boy, I remember I'm playing a lot of the same players and the success you had. So that kind of breeds confidence. So I think the Rams will be confident coming into the Superdome to face the Saints, but they got to turn the corner. When you look at it, it doesn't get any easier for the Rams trying to be playoff relevant. After the Saints, they host the hot Buffalo Bills. Now, the 49ers are struggling. You look at the NFC West, how wide open that is. So I guess the Rams could be saying, the NFC West is still up for grabbing, considering when you look at everyone's record, everyone's the same, whether it's the Seahawks, Arizona.
Arizona laid an egg yesterday.
Yeah, ooh, yeah. Aaron, that has to be wide open as far as the Rams' perspective with the NFC West.
Right, it is. It's crazy. Last week, before all the games happened, it was a 5-5 three-way tie. The Cardinals were 6-4, and the other three teams were 5-5. You saw that the Seahawks managed to beat the Cardinals. They jumped to first. And the 49ers, obviously, just dealing with so many different injuries, they've been so inconsistent. They're last place in the NFC West. But because it's so bottled up, 2-3, and the fact that, the Rams beat the Seahawks already, and the Cardinals beat the Rams, it's just anyone's guess. And I think we're really going to have to end up figuring out who's going to take that playoff spot down the stretch when more of the NFC West teams end up playing each other. But, yeah, it's neck and neck, and that's what I mean. It's been such an up-and-down season because it seems like, as Rams media have said week in and week out, every single game counts. That's why this Eagles matchup hurt so bad, because it really did just have such major playoff implications. And, it was an embarrassment. The Rams, in that opening drive, took it all the way down the field. Kyren, the two fumbles with Kyren, who I want to say at this point among all running backs leads the league in fumbles. You just have to go back to the drawing board to figure out why is this happening. And you mentioned it, right? Matthew Stafford is an elite quarterback. Figuring out how to stop him, I think a lot of teams saw the blueprint last night with the Eagles. Rush him, pressure him, and keep him off balance. And that ends up being sort of the reason why teams beat the Rams and Sean McVay right now.
Now, last thing, Aaron, before we let you run, everyone wants their rookie class to contribute at a high level. It seems like they got the right player and Jared Verse and what he's meant to that Rams defense.
And Brandon Fisk.
Yeah.
Man, we've seen enough of them when they played LSU.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say we haven't seen a lot of explosive plays from the offense in general, but you do have to like what we're seeing in our rookie class. Jared Verse, Brandon Fisk, they've managed to, I wouldn't say replace. You can't replace a guy like Aaron Donald, obviously. But I think a lot of people have their hopes high with what those young guys are able to do. They've made some really key explosive plays when the Rams have needed it. And we hope it continues when they pay you guys a visit in New Orleans. And I do want to say, whether the Rams win and make it to the postseason and maybe hopefully the Super Bowl, I'm going to be in New Orleans. So I'm going to pay you guys a visit.
All right.
Hopefully you'll let me come say hi.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Yeah. Absolutely. Aaron, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Happy Thanksgiving to you. And if we don't see you before, we'll see you Super Bowl week.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me. Good luck this week.
All right, Aaron. Thank you.
Aaron Coscarelli.
So Mike, you think you'll be as upset if we beat the Rams? I think it will be.
It would be a major upset.
That's what I think. Just because how we played against them last year. Yeah. That's what I have on my brain.
We'll be back to finish it up here on Second Guess right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're finishing up here on the Second Guess Show. Mike Dettelia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, live from the Silver Slipper Casino beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. Want to thank all the listeners, callers, everybody that contributed to the show tomorrow.
Come see us tomorrow.
We'll be at Rouse's Markets in Houma on Martin Luther King Boulevard.
What is that, Houma the Real Chicken?
Houma the Real Chicken.
Yeah.
And so we got some people here that'll follow us out there. Yeah. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with more
sports talk
right here on the Big 870 WWL. Oh, no, we still got some time. Bob, who you like tonight?
Chargers? The Chargers. I'm a Jim Harbaugh fan. And those people, either you like or you dislike Jim Harbaugh, talk about he's good people. I'm telling you, he might rub you the wrong way, but he is a good guy. He is a good guy.
And you've known him from two different spots.
Right,
or
exactly.
Maybe three.
Yeah, I mean, Michael, this goes back to the early 80s. That's over 40 years. I'm telling you, he has not changed. He is a good dude. His brother's good. John Harbaugh's good, too. But I think Jim's better. I know John, but I'm more panaz with Jim. So, all right.
All right, Bob.
All right. You want me to tell him goodbye?
Hey, tell him goodbye, Bob.
All right. Bonne nuit, les gens. Good night, people. Who dat? Go Saints.